Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
And I am J-Clone 120.
120.
I'm here to learn about sea monsters.
Oh, is that what we're going to talk about today?
I don't know. I hope so, because that's the one they sent in. I was enjoying a nice fishing trip. I got the phone call to show up to the studio today. And here I am.
You're going to hear in the background a old crusty book opening and closing a lot this episode.
It is crusty.
I've had this book a long time. It's been in many states, but we're going to be using it for about the first half of today's episode.
I couldn't tell. You've had it for a while.
Yeah, I've had it for a long time. It is the Field Guide to Lake Monsters and Sea Serpents and Other Mysterious Denizens of the Deep by Lauren Coleman and Patrick Hugh.
Lauren Coleman, a pioneer in this field.
Yeah, if anybody didn't have this book, it's a huge book. It's really, really awesome. I highly suggest you get it. Lauren Coleman and Patrick Hughes has done a lot with sea monsters, lake monsters too. But Lauren Coleman's probably one of the most famous living cryptozoologists.
Oh, 100% living, yes. I mean, doesn't get any much bigger than him for the living examples. He's definitely the Mount Rushmore of living.
I mean, he'd be on there for the Mount Rushmore of cryptozoologists, period.
Okay.
But.
Yeah.
We're going to specifically talk about one of his types, and they have this classification system for sightings and all that, but it's kind of changed a little bit, and he's even changed it. This book, let me see what year it came out. Old crusty book, flipping pages.
It's older. When this come out in the... My guess is going to be 80s, maybe 70s.
2003.
I was way off. You made it look... This book looks way older than that.
2003 was... 2 decades ago.
Look at the state of that book.
It's been on the water a lot.
I know.
But a lot of this, I think a lot of this work is from the 90s.
I guess don't judge a book by its cover.
Mm-hmm. No, so we're going to talk about water horses. Are there water horse classification?
Water horses?
Yeah.
Okay. Not seahorses.
Not kelpies either.
Okay, or them, yeah. Florida kelpie.
Very different. That's kudzu kelpie.
Kudzu kelpie, dang it.
Which is like a horse made out, like Kelpies are, they're different.
Right.
But yeah, we're going to talk about water horses. We're going to do some sightings in the book, and we're going to talk about some possibilities of what they could be.
Okay.
So before I get into it, when I say water horse, what do you think?
Just a horse that swims underwater, basically shaped, a horse-shaped creature that swims on, that's underwater. That's my guess.
That's kind of what these guys look like on the average, mm-hmm. but not quite. They have a horse-like head on the end of a long neck. What appears to be, they think they may be sexually dimorphic a little bit. What they think are the females don't have a mane or as much of a mane, and the males seem to have a shaggy mane running down their neck.
Okay. What's the rest of the body look like?
A seal.
Oh.
So now what's the difference? Do you remember what the difference between a seal and a sea lion is, right?
Yes, a seal remains in water primarily its whole life, correct?
Yeah.
And a sea lion, they come up on land. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the big difference is the flippers of a seal are designed almost exclusively for aquatic life, and they have to like bounce and kind of like do inchworms to crawl on land. The best example is the elephant seal for being a truly massive animal, but their feet, their back feet, are just tail flippers.
Almost. Okay.
With a sea lion, they still have, so another one is seals don't have visible ears.
Ah, okay.
Sea lions do.
Dude, that was the big indicator.
But also how they stand. They have still their distinctive 4 feet with flippers that they can walk up on all four of them when the back feet of seals are useless.
Okay.
So these guys have a seal body with a long neck. So imagine that your classic, like, not a plesiosaur, but how people used to draw plesiosaurs.
Right, yep.
But a mammal.
Okay. So a horse head, giraffe neck, and a seal body.
And the horse head, we'll get into. So here, I'll read their description for it out of you. The water horse is a gigantic, fresh, and saltwater cryptid. It has an elongated body with a neck. A round body showing above the water, 2 sets of flipper, a rear one that are together, and it almost have the appearance of a tail fluke of a whale. The animal often exhibits a mane when seen in close range and seems to be covered in a light fur, similar to that of seals, which is a compressed fur.
Okay.
So if anybody's ever been around seals or sea lions, either one, doesn't matter, they are furry. They are just have compressed fur, so when they're wet or freshly wet, it looks like skin.
Mm-hmm.
But they are 100% covered in fur.
Almost indistinguishable.
When they're dry out, they get like fuzzy.
Yeah.
Even
the baby ones look really cute.
Then they have like a lot of fur.
Yeah.
But adult ones will have like, they have like a fuzz to them.
That'd be fun to just see one to get a hair dried and blowed out, get all puffied up.
The animal often exhibits, like I said, a mane. The water horse seems to have rather poor eyesight, but an accurate sense of hearing.
Oh, okay. That's different.
Observe it. Well,
for underwater.
Is it?
I would imagine so.
Not if you're diving and hunting near the bottom where your eyes don't do you much good.
I guess so.
But hearing communications with each other, like whales have an extraordinary like ability sonar. To hear. Well, yeah. Like whales have an extraordinary ability to hear.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have visible ears, but they can hear.
That's true.
Observers report size and forms variations that are probably due to age, region, gender differences. Sexual variation in particular is probably the most reasonable for the appearance of the 2 distinct categories. Within the water horse type, the one larger and hairier, and the one smaller and smoother. So through this book, there's like those two.
Okay.
Where they pop up the most frequently, these 2 types. So they may be the same species, and they may be the male and female.
Sexual dimorphism.
The long neck, named after Hoovelman's long neck, their type of like sea monster, is 30 to 70 feet long, with a small head at the end of a long, slender neck. Some of our observers report bumps or stalks on the head. So, like, they've drawn that. Like, remember when we talked about Pinky?
Yes.
Pinky had 2 bumps on his head?
Yes.
Like that.
Okay. Pinky being the what we think could be the stellar sea cow of the St. John's River in Florida.
Not even. We talked about...
I guess we could be other things.
Well, do you remember that episode, what we thought it was?
What was it? What did we decide?
Well, I'm not going to tell you now because it's the same thing I think this one is.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we'll stay tuned.
The long neck has been not only in marine environments, but some have been reported in freshwater lakes and rivers. This kind of instills you the classical like movie depiction of Nessie.
Okay.
The long neck, which is generally smaller than the other category of water horse, appears to reflect the female of the species or female of the species. So the plural version.
Mm-hmm.
There may be several species
of these guys.
And then the one without the mane, essentially, is going to be probably the female.
Okay.
The next category is the merhorse, after Hovelmann's like-named major type, has been reported to be 40 to 100 feet long, with a thin horse-like head, pointed eyes, smooth skin, and a flowing mane and thick whiskers on its face. Some are said to have beards. The merhorse is the male of Lauren and Hugh think of the species. The features are originally given to the creatures its name, the mane on the back, the long flowing hair, much like the horse's mane, that extends down most over the body through a heavy neck and a lack of a terminal tail. So this is just like they have the feet flippers.
Okay.
So like in seals and stuff like that, they technically have a tail, but it's like tying right up in there.
Oh, and not even big enough to notice.
Yeah.
Or to even do anything.
Merhorses seem to be fast swimmers and can submerge dramatically in a vertical manner, almost as if they were being pulled downward suddenly.
Hmm.
So they probably can swim backwards is what that means.
That's what it sounds like, at least.
At least jet backwards one time.
Yeah, like a shrimp.
Like a shrimp. Any questions so far?
This is odd.
Is it?
Yeah.
So we have the classification system, they're all mer horses or water horses. Mer horse is what what Lauren believed is the male, and the long neck would be the female. The long neck is 30 to 70 feet long in most sightings, and then the mer horse is 40 to 100 feet long. But judging animals in the water
is different, yeah.
It's incredibly difficult.
But still, like 70, you know, on the one end and 100 on the other end being the max point, roughly, that's huge.
Still smaller than a lot of whale species.
It's still, but
I'm not saying it's not huge.
It's still a big creature.
It's not out of the range of modern day mammals.
Right. How wide? Is there a kind of thing how wide they are, or like is it?
And keep in mind, a lot of that's a neck, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you look at sauropods that are 110 feet long,
mm-hmm.
50 foot of that is a neck.
Right.
They're barrel shaped, they're very whale shaped in the chest. So a 100-foot whale would be like 20 foot in diameter.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay.
So a 70 foot one of these guys, if it's roughly the same, is going to be like 8 foot across.
That's big. It's a big boy.
That's the big, that's the top sizes.
Right, exactly.
Most of them are going to report it a lot smaller. Like, I think a lot of the long necks are going to be reported in the 30 foot range.
Okay.
And a lot of your mer horses are going to be in like the 40 foot range.
Not small. Not at all.
The range. The water horse is a cosmopolitan found in marine fjords, lakes, and river environments. The longs, locks, and lakes are generally similar to location to location. They are deep and often steep shores at the point of the water's edge. So very much Loch Ness like lakes.
Right.
Where when you're 30 foot off the shore, you're at the bottom. Like you can go straight down 700 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying in their research, they found very little outside of that. You don't see them a lot in shallow lakes.
Okay.
You see deep lakes. These cryptids inhabit specific belts of lakes that are located in what's called the monster latitude. And we can come back to that later. So there's a region, a latitude around the world where there seems to be a lot of these guys end up in lakes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like Lauren Corman, they've been doing this a long time.
Does Loch Ness fall in that latitude? Wow.
Lengthy necks, mane sea serpents, and lake monsters tend to cluster in certain areas around the globe, in the oceans as well as freshwater lakes and rivers. The latitude near isometric line, 50 degrees, between 32 and 67, especially in the northern hemisphere, and there's some evidence suggesting the southern hemisphere as well.
Got like that same latitude
on
the southern counterpart.
It'd be roughly the same climate.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. As roughly. Above, so below, they say. This is what they meant. They were talking about water horses this whole time.
They were talking about water horses.
Oh, I should have read that in the hermetic principles.
So let's get into some sightings. Why don't you talk for a second? I got to flip.
Oh, well, we just figured that one out, what that as above, so below means. That we're talking about monster latitude lines, monster lakes. That's good to know.
So the first one I got for you is a water horse, the long neck category. December 7th, 1905, off a Pimhiba, Brazil.
Okay.
Witness, and like this is how they break down the book. Like the book is awesome. E.G.B. Webb Marlowe and Michael J. Nicole.
Those are the two witnesses?
Yeah.
Okay.
So for the third year running, the Earl of the crew of the Ford, Lord Lindsay, the man of a scientific renown, has been president of the Royal Astronomer Society from 1878 to 1879. Had equipped the Valhalla, his large luxurious yacht of 1,700 tons.
It's a big old ship.
As an oceanographic vessel. Sorry, research vessel. On the 1905 voyage, there were several scientists, including two fellows of Zoological Society expeditions and naturalist E.G.B. Wardlow, and the expedition entomologist Michael J. Nicole. So they were doing, this other guy had set up a giant research vessel, the head of the Astronomer Society, and took his yacht and basically made it into a research ship and had all kinds of scientists on board.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. So when you look at the sighting that may happen here in a second, most of the people on the board were scientists,
right?
In 1905.
Do you know anyone with a super yacht that would want to do the same thing that is our friend?
Not our friend.
Dang, okay. It's worth asking. Anyone out there, if you know anyone, we'll happily join that. We'll gladly join that crew.
Yeah. On December 7th at 10:15 a.m., the Valhalla was cruising along 14 knots off the Atlantic coast, about 15 miles east of the north of the Paraba River. Nicole drew at the unusual shape of the ocean, about 100 yards away. "Is that a fin of a great fish?" Nicole asked Wardlow, recounting the events in his journal. Wardlow wrote, "I looked and immediately saw what appeared to be a large fin or frill sticking out of the water, dark seaweed in color, somewhat crackly at the edge. It was approximately about 6 feet in length and projected about 18 inches to 2 feet out of the water."
Okay.
"As Wardlow reached for his powerful binoculars, a great head and neck rose out of the water in front of the frill. The neck did not touch the frill in the water, but came out of the water in front of the disturbance, certainly not less than 18 inches, probably more. The neck appeared to have the thickness of a slight man's body, and about 7 to 8 feet out of the water. The head and the neck were all about the same thickness."
So it's, you know, the thickness about me on its neck.
I was going
to
say.
I knew you were. I just wanted to beat you to it.
Wardlow clearly stated that it was turtle-like. He plainly viewed the line of the mouth, which only came to the little way, not past the eye. So it has a small mouth at the front, which was also visible. The head and the neck moved back and forth in a peculiar manner, he reported. The color in the head, it was a brown, dark brown, above a whitish below, indeed almost white or dirty white in color. So it has the cryptic coloring.
Okay.
The back's dark, belly's all cream or a white color. Sorry, I don't know if we said this at the beginning. Me and Jay are both sick.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if we mentioned it in this one yet.
So
good luck this week. You got to deal with it.
I'm trying to keep my breath.
Yeah.
Wardlow and Nicole also wrote of the encounter in Proceedings of the Zoological Society of London, as well in the 1908 book, Three Voyages of Naturalist. Nicole's description confirms Wardlow's differences being only in the matter of degree, such as under the color was silver white instead of almost white. The fin looked to be a gigantic piece of ribbon seaweed. So that's just, we call it bull kelp kind of stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
As the giant black and brown pieces. Additionally, he noted that they had watched it together for several minutes as the fast-traveling yacht had overtaken it. During the 14 hours after the sighting, they went above twice at around 2 a.m. The first and third mate reported a great commotion in the water, about 100 to 150 yards off the port side. It appeared to be a creature, was going fast at the yacht at some point, was sailing at 18 and a half knots. The officer watched, though, reminded that it submerged going below the surface. They viewed it for several minutes, but could not get a clear look at the creature and noted it sounded off the port and vanished. So it made some kind of noise before it would dive.
What noise did it make? I need to do something funny.
So they have much more here about this encounter, but that's all we're going to read of this particular one. So about 8 foot tall neck that the one guy said turtle like, and I don't understand why because the other guy didn't agree with him. But a small mouth, it was just the front. It did not come back to the eye, which was clearly visible.
Mm-hmm.
About 8 foot out of the water, about 18 inches between where the neck came out and the hump, the back hump started.
Okay.
So that kelp and stuff like that, they think it was the fur, this furry lump on the back.
On the, like its mane, basically?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Extending down its back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or it could have been kelp wrapped up on it.
It could have been.
This is also the area when, I think it was a Patreon episode, we did the Beast of Bosco of the Ocean.
Yeah.
This is the same place.
Oh, okay.
In South America.
Wow.
This is like maybe 50 miles from where that took place.
Wow.
This is also an extreme hot spot for migrating whales.
Okay.
So the creature that tried to eat the whale out there, that the guy tried to hunt, and it ruined his captain career.
Yeah.
Was like right here.
Okay.
So
it's a hot spot.
Well, if you remember what we talked about, that spot was that it's one of these few spots in the Atlantic coast to where ocean-going animals can take a break.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Daytona Beach, where Daytona Beach has all kinds of crazy, weird sea monsters, one-off stuff.
Because it's right off the jet stream. Yeah. It's nice and shallow and warm. So it's probably on a ley line.
So same things here, where that's why there's so many different types of whale and so many types of sea monster described.
Kind of accumulate here.
Yeah. So that may be a good spot to just see any big ocean-going animal maybe taking a break here for a short period of time.
Hmm.
So what do you think of this encounter?
I'm wondering, you know, they both didn't quite agree on the turtle thing. However, like long-necked turtles, you know, what if it's just a soft-shelled mammal version of a long-necked turtle that follows that body plan?
I tend to agree that's what it is.
Yeah.
I won't tell you what mammal.
I don't know the mammal. At least it's not coming to my head, but
it may even be a reptomam.
You mean, no, what's the name of those? It's,
well, there's therapsids and synapsids.
Synapsids, yeah. That's my, maybe it's a leftover.
Synapsin.
Yeah. Well, either way, so this is the ocean, right?
Yeah, it's the ocean.
So these creatures it doesn't matter whether it's ocean or freshwater, correct?
Yeah, so the ones seen in freshwater, they go into it in a lot of depth, seem to be much more seasonally based.
Okay.
So, like we talked about in our Nessie episode, you know, we thought Nessie was probably a giant salamander, but if it was one of these type of creatures, they would maybe be a seasonal visitor following salmon in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a lot what's happening with some of these creatures.
They could even breed in freshwater, for all we know.
They could give birth in freshwater. They could breed in freshwater. There could be all kinds of factors kind of pushing these guys. But just due to their size, I don't think they're staying in freshwater very long.
Right, it wouldn't make sense.
Our biggest freshwater fish, for example, are like the arapaima and like three or four giant catfish, and they all kind of top out at like 800 pounds.
Where can arapaima get into? Like, they show up in any weird spots?
Arowana is the one that was in Chicago.
Oh, not an arapaima. Dang. Okay.
His little cousin.
Okay.
Which is not a little fish.
No, yeah.
When your cousin's one of the biggest freshwater fish in the world.
Shouldn't be in Chicago.
But when you look at stuff like white sturgeon, where they're androgynous, they reproduce and give birth in freshwater.
Mm-hmm.
They can be, right now, our biggest alive that we have really good documentation of is 16 to 17 feet long, being about 2,000, 3,000 pounds. There's historical evidence to suggest they got 25 feet long and maybe closer to 7,000 pounds.
Dang.
So a true monster.
Yeah.
That would only visit, you know, for very short periods of time and just give birth.
That's nuts.
And that's way upriver when they'd go upriver. But they would follow salmon runs in because sturgeon are egg eaters.
Mm.
So they'll follow salmon runs up rivers just to sit there. And they'll basically scoop up big chunks of rock off the bottom of the riverbeds and sift out the eggs and drop the rocks.
Dang, okay.
Sturgeon are very good at that. So for these guys, the size of them, I would be very hard-pressed to say these are residential freshwater guys.
Okay, I agree with that.
Next one. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Water horse. Category merhorse. Our first one was a long neck.
Right. So
this is a female. Merhorse.
Male. Speculatively
think.
Yes.
Which I tend to agree with.
Yeah. I mean, There's
at least, you know,
there's it reasons. Makes sense. Yes, exactly. I was going to say, there's reasons that why we'd come to that conclusion. So yes, I would agree with you too. It does make sense. It's a good speculative reach to make.
Yes. All right. The HMS Corinthian was an attractive coral burning passenger ship, coal burning, sorry, ship, which guns had been fitted on, patrolling the Great Banks of Newfoundland in the days of the summer of 1913. Do you know what was happening in 1913?
1913 was before World War One, correct?
Wasn't it right at the start?
Or was it right at the start? Yeah, you might be right, actually, yeah.
It was either right at the start, or you should look it up.
Well, Newfoundland, though, that's Canada.
Canada.
Yeah. Yep. Make sure we get that for our listeners that Canada. Don't know.
So same ocean, completely opposite end of the world from the first story. But it's both the Atlantic Oceans. So patrolling the Great Banks, Newfoundland the day, 1913 officer on watch, G. Butchler, or sorry, Butchler, like butcher, but bachelor.
Okay.
Butchler.
Butchler.
Was looking around at 4:30 a.m. during the shift change. And the second officer, Butchler, saw about a mile straight ahead startled him. At first, he thought it was a stranded fishing boat that had suddenly disappeared beneath the surface. So before I continue, wouldn't that be scary?
A little bit.
You're just like, oh, there's a stranded fishing boat out there. Well, let's go help them. And then they just get yanked straight under.
Yeah. Like, Kraken. Oh. Turn around. Turn around.
Oh. What'd you find the year?
Yeah, 1914, you're way off. So,
1914, way off. Right before the start.
Literally right before it, yeah.
Right before things got popping.
Quick rim shot, put it in reverse.
That's tensions were high. So suddenly disappeared, or something surprisingly showed itself about 200 feet away from the ship. He recalled later pinning the description in the British newspaper. Here's what he has to say.
Mm-hmm.
First appeared a great head, long fin-like ears, the great blue eyes. The eyes were mild and liquid with no indications of ferocity. So saying like gentle creature. Big pretty eyes.
Didn't look aggressive. Gentle creature. Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
Following said eyes came the neck. It was a regular neck, all right, although it was of 20 feet in length, which greatly resembled a giraffe. The monster took its time emerging from his long neck as it wondered what the end would look like. The neck seemed to be set on a ball bearing, so supply it was so rhythmically did it sway little the large liquid blue eyes took in the ship with a surprise, injured, or fearful stare. The creature was well fixed on the sidearms. Three horny fins surrounded its bony head, so it had bumps on its head.
Okay.
The body was about the same size as the neck, very much like the monster seal or sea lion that was snorting water-smooth fur. The tail was split into two great fins. The color scheme was good, although some might think it was giddy. Light brown, yellow, tastefully splattered with spots of darker hues. For a minute, the creature inspected the ship with its voring gauge. And then it disappeared, showing it afterwards as it had dived. So you could see the plumes of water. It was running away from the ship.
Okay.
So before I continue, I'm not going to read the whole thing out on any of these stories. I'm just going to read the main chunks so you buy the book.
Right, yeah.
But he goes on to continue that it was probably two different creatures.
Oh, so they were seen two separate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the first one he seen was a mile off.
Right.
The second one popped up right almost there. Immediately at 200 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
But describes it very mammalian, deep blue eyes, long neck, no fear. Like, it wasn't a scary monster. But he said it kept, like, when this rhythmic movement of the neck, it was scanning up and down the ship and then became affixed upon the guns.
Mm.
So it may have been some recognition.
Scanning, yes.
So that's when it had fearfulness in its eyes.
Hmm.
So keep in mind, this 1913, this is right after the industrial onslaught of whales was coming to an end. Not because they didn't want the whales, because there were no more whales.
Hmm. Makes sense.
So remember, who did they turn on after the whales?
The whalers?
Yeah.
Wasn't it like sea lions or stuff or big
elephant seals and other large bodied seals?
Yeah.
So this guy would have been, just from the size description, about right there with him.
Yeah.
So he may have had some pot shots at him by harpooners. So seeing a gunship, you may have recognized, you know, harpoon, you know, they threw harpoons up until they did have some, it wasn't a cannon. I don't remember the actual word for it, but like a black powder harpoon guns and stuff like that. No, so the industrial whaling was like, it wasn't over by like any means, but it was to the point where they were, it still isn't, but
yeah.
And this time it was to the point where they were starting to slaughter many other animals.
Yeah. If you were big and in the water and
you had oil in you.
Yeah. And we could shoot a spear into you, you're mine.
So this got labeled the sea giraffe encounter. Because he said it was just like a big, like it looked like a big brown giraffe. It had knobs on its head like a giraffe. Eyes, the ears, some people think when they go into the talking about the counter, they think that was actually the mane. It probably didn't have these big floppy ears, that it was just wet chunks of the mane. From a guy with matted hair, I can tell you, just sometimes when it's wet, there's just chunks of it.
That just stick up.
Yeah. So I don't know. What do you think about this one?
It's very, very interesting. I wonder if it was two in tandem doing, still didn't explain exactly if that's what pulled the ship down, but.
No, the ship was a different creature.
Oh, that's why. Okay, that makes more sense.
The neck was a mast.
There we go. Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
And that's, remember I talk about they dive straight backwards?
Immediately, yeah.
So he thinks it was the second creature had.
Shoop.
Yeah.
Went down.
So it was big enough he mistook it for a small ship. Fishing
boat. Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Sorry.
No, that's my bad. I guess I just got caught up. I got a fix on that. Like, oh my goodness, this creature, this monster, he's swallowing ships whole. But then he's had like these docile, gentle eyes. Like, well, that don't add up.
So we'll come back in a second after our ad break.
Yeah, I'm starving.
And then we'll get back to some more encounters and what these things could be.
All right.
Are you ready?
Yep. Ho, 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 Merry Christmas. It's Santa here, bringing you merriment and cheer. Get your friends and family today some Flavors of the Forest, 100% freeze-dried garlic, capturing all that natural flavor and nutrition. If you don't want chemicals to season your food this Christmas season, order some Flavors of the Forest for your health-conscious friends. It's the perfect stocking stuffer. Ho, ho, ho.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
And we're back. Hopefully you like the Christmas ads.
Aha.
They have not plugged them into the soundboard yet. That's why you're looking at me funny.
Aha.
But they're in here now.
Yes.
All right. We'll do at least one, maybe two more before we get into what these guys could be. You ready?
Yeah, let's get another account.
North Atlantic near Iceland. So this is off in the coast near Iceland.
Okay, so now we're jumping across.
Still in the Atlantic.
Right.
Just there are in the Pacific. It just
We're circling around. We're doing a big round in the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm. Long neck type, May 22nd, 1917, south of Ireland, Captain F.W. Dean and his crew. Before and during the First World War, armed merchant cruisers patrolled a blockade from the Scottish coast to the Arctic ice line. With a keen eye on the horizon, they were looking for enemy submarines. The crew of the Hillary would be remarkable, or would have a remarkable encounter. So before I continue, you know, during World War One, submarines were not what we think of submarines now. A lot of times they did have pieces above the water.
Right.
But they were very close to the waterline.
Yes.
So you didn't have this great big silhouette. And there was tons of sightings of these creatures at this time. Not because there's probably more of them, probably because more people were looking for submarines that were sinking ships.
Right, exactly.
So that's what the ship was doing, is patrolling, looking for submarines.
Okay.
While sailing south of Iceland at 9 a.m. on a crisp sunny morning, the Royal Navy commander, Captain F.W. Dean, was called to the bridge and told there was an object on the starboard quarter. "What is it? What is that, a periscope?" Dean questioned. "Where is it?" "It is not a periscope," he was told. "It was a living thing, though not a whale, and it was pointed out at him." Dean thought it looked like a tree trunk with a knobby end, and through the binoculars, he discovered that the knobby thing was the head of what appeared to be a dorsal fin of a living thing. Commander Dean, writing of his experience in 1920, said this his crew never missed a chance to do a bit of anti-submarine practice in those days.
He's going to shoot a torpedo at it. Or something at it, right?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, what do you think?
Anti-submarine practice? Yeah, I think blow that thing up.
Big creature.
Yeah.
It's submarine-shaped.
Let's destroy it for practice.
I wonder why that first one really didn't, like really looked at the guns off the ship. And like,
it's like, wait a minute.
Ah! I wonder why sea monsters don't talk to us. Hmm. Anti-submarine practice.
The only nice one was the one in Mario 64, stuck in that cave. He was gentle.
Didn't it die in the next one?
Oh, don't say that. I don't know.
I think it was because it was a skeleton in like the next Mario game.
No, I didn't know that. Rest in peace.
All right. So they swung the 3 6-pound guns, as well as the ship's heavier guns, into place. But before the Hillary fired on the stranger as a target, Dean decided to try to get a closer look at the creature.
Okay.
So the captain was like, "All right, I guess you guys can shoot it." And then as they swung, he's like, "Well, let's try to get a closer look at the thing before we just blow it to hell."
Right.
The head was about the shape of, but somewhat larger than that of a cow, he wrote.
Okay.
Though there was no observational protuberances, such as horns or ears, he said it was black, except for the front of the face, which you could clearly see to have a stripe of that of a white flesh, very like a cow between the nostrils. So it had like a distinct nose with a little bit of a different color.
Okay.
So if you think like a cow snout, like a lot of times that flesh changes there because they're really flexible.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I think he's trying to describe there.
Okay.
As the head rose 3 times to look at the ship, the black 4-foot-long dorsal fin looked thin and flabby. The upper part turns over somewhat to the top of a terrier's ear when cocked. So the top of the fin kind of turned like a dog's ear.
Makes sense, yeah. I know what he's describing.
The navigator said the creature's neck was not less than 15 feet long, while Captain Dean thought it was around 20 feet long. Years later, when questioned, Dean would confirm that there was not a basking shark, of which had been seen 30 footers in this Irish channel. Nor was it that of a large whale. As the ship approached it within 1,200 yards, they fired 3 5-pound rounds at the creature. While the first 2 rounds failed to disturb it, the third round did some damage, which was the second shot making it a clean hit. The animal caused a ferocious commotion. A few seconds later, all was quiet. The creature had disappeared. Because it was in chunks.
Yeah, sinking.
It was just the bottom of the ocean. The officer watched, very worried about the incident, and requested that the encounter not be placed in the ship's logs, because they felt bad for shooting a defenseless animal. Yeah.
Wait till PETA hears about this.
Yeah, it's shooting the thing, and then it dies, like making ungodly noises, and like, oh, now we feel bad.
Really? Oh, whoops.
That wasn't a monster. It was just a sea thing.
Hmm.
Officer Harris told him, "Nonsense, of course I must put it in the log. Matter of the captain's orders." "Well, that makes it certainly anyhow," said the officer of the watch, believing that it was bad luck to kill the creature. "We shall never reach port again."
Uh-oh.
So it was like some of the crew were very, very upset. They shot at the creature.
They killed it.
I don't know. They killed it. They just hit it with anti-submarine rounds.
Yeah. Okay.
And then it flailed, and then there was blood everywhere. I added the blood part. 3 days later, the Henry sunk a German submarine not far from the place they used the long-necked sea monster as target practice.
Good thing they got that practice in. They might have missed.
The captain and most of the crew were rescued before the ship sank. The officers all watched as they plucked out his possessions. Oh, sorry. I miswrote it. The Hitler was sunk by the German ship.
Right. So, oh, his ship was sunk, so yeah. He had it backwards. Okay, the submarine sunk them.
Yeah.
Okay, oh, payback.
So they most of them got rescued. They were watching the Germans go in and steal all their possessions floating in the water.
Nice.
Don't shoot at mer horses.
No, don't.
Especially when it was like, so that the flipper thing, I think it was laying on its side with its neck above. I think that was its actual, like, arm flipper.
So he's waving high like a whale.
Yeah.
He's like, "Hey, guys."
Yeah, he's waving.
"Welcome to my side of the ocean."
Well, seals and otters will actually, like, do that to their sides with their flippers.
Like a little sumo wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And talk, and they'll actually use it for communication and stuff like that. So it may have been saying hi to them.
Yeah.
And they started launching mortars.
"Hello, fellow ocean dwellers.
Hey, other ocean explorers. Welcome." Boom. The first two are like, "What is that?"
Yeah.
When the third one hit it, and then it died. It did die. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, they killed this thing. And he was right. It cursed them.
You imagine being that, like,
what goes around comes around.
We just shot a baby sea god.
Yeah.
That's not great.
Yeah. Payback is a-coming.
All right. You want one more?
Let's do it.
All right. Mer horse category. Water horse category. Mer horse.
So male.
Male. September 1920, Mascoute Harbor, St. Clement Island, California. So our Pacific Ocean. We'll end on the Pacific Ocean.
There we go.
For several years at the beginning of the 20th century, the creature known as the St. Clement Monster was anything but shy. It frequented the waters between St. Clement Island and St. Camilla Island and St. Clement Island. Two sea things for a dyslexic guy. Some of the most heavily sport-fished waters in America at the time. A mere 50 miles south of Los Angeles, the St. Clement Monster was reported so often between 1914 and 1919 that it captured the attention of game fishermen along the Southern California coast. So this guy was seen so often. He was showing off. It was by ships constantly. That several big game fishermen were like, "It's time to get this thing."
Why does that have to be our first instinct?
People are always like, "Why aren't there as many sea monster sightings anymore?" Well, they were shooting at them first off, the ones that didn't die.
Yeah.
They learned that people will shoot mortars at you for practice.
I feel like human technology should have a cap on it, because once it gets so far, we only use it to kill things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every time. Because I'm sure before, like, you know, back in the the early dawn of human Homo sapien, we're out there, I'm just assuming it, according to this timeline, you know, we're out there hunting these big megafauna. You know, we'd only get one if we needed it. And, you know, we needed to support our community for,
you ate it.
Now we have the ability, one guy can get one high-powered rifle with his assistant spotter to go out with him.
A 5-pound anti-submarine gun.
Right, yeah. And one guy can go out and take out a massive megafauna on land or air or sea and take it and hang it up on his wall just because, and probably just dump the rest in a ditch somewhere. Technology isn't always the best thing.
I thought we were going to get on the big game hunting
spiel. It's kind of what I am pointing at, but technology has a big reason
trophy why. Trophy hunting is such, I'm talking big megafauna trophy hunting, is such a controversial. People may not understand what I'm about to say. There is mostly bad, but there is some good that comes out of some of the African countries for megafauna hunting. like some of the preserves, and I'm not saying this justifies it.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of the wildlife preserves will, like, say they have a rhino. This is one of the famous ones. One of these guys in America got to kill a white rhino bull, a southern white rhino bull,
mm-hmm.
just this massive white rhino. And everybody was like down, and because Ambler had a huge population of white rhinos that they were starting to take them in other places.
Yeah.
The reason the game preserve said they did it was because we were going to put him down anyways, because he was killing all of the baby bulls.
Yeah.
So he'd killed 15 other rhinos as part of the breeding program.
Yeah.
So we were going to euthanize him. So we sold the rights to an American hunter for like $400,000. And that's our operating budget for the next 3 years.
That's an ethical way for it, for big game hunting.
And I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that it's a really dense issue.
For sure.
You can't just say, I think it's bad. I don't think you should kill elephants. But there's a lot that goes into the thing. It's not black and white.
No, it's nuanced. And in that case, if it's a breeding population that you're trying to reclimate, is that the right? I don't know if that's the right word, but you're trying to build back up.
Yeah.
And this one rogue guy is wrecking all of that. He needs to go. Why not? Yeah. Send a guy that's trained to do it, I guess, in a sense, or has the money to do it.
The money to do it.
Sell it off to him. Let him take care of your issue.
Clement Island.
Yes.
50 miles.
We're back.
Los Angeles. People probably think that's edited when we do that. It's not. It's just that we realize we've gotten off topic. Right. So one of the men that decided to take the matter into his own hands was Ralph Mundy, one of the greatest fishermen of all time, in 1919. He was the secretary of the Tuna Club, the finest of all Americans.
Not what I was explaining to you. I was like...
The Tuna Club.
He's very famous. Like, secretary, I was like, like in the government.
Do you want to guess what the Tuna Club's signature sandwich is?
A tuna melt.
No.
Oh, what? A ham sandwich.
A Tuna Club.
Okay. Okay. Because I should have guessed that right off the rip.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I thought
I'm
it was
so
just
sick. I'm so sick.
Maybe be something ridiculous.
All right. So where was I? The finest of all America big game fishing clubs at the time. So before I get to you, it was like the Tuna Club wasn't just for tuna. It was representative of, like, you were talking about megafaunal fish.
Oh,
sport,
okay.
Fishing.
Okay.
They were like the thing at the time, and he was one of the head members of it.
Mm-hmm.
Bermuni was a lawyer, and he was a member of the state's Fish and Game Commission. He championed conservation for the California coastal resources. He died in 1961, left most of his enduring legacy to the sports of big game fishing in his writings, in particular to the three books titled Tight Lines, Valley Horizons, and Men, Fish, and Tackle. In his book Tight Lines, privately published in 1932, he told his own experience encountering with the San Clement Monster. He first saw the monster in 1919. Though it was only briefly, while he was 10 miles off the coast of Clantamia Island, California. He was out fishing with his crew. One of the crew members, Percy Neal, shouted, "Look, look, look over there." But a mile away, they could see something rising higher and higher out of the water. He was convinced that it was the monster. But not until September of 1920 would he get a close enough encounter to allow him to be certain of what he had saw. So that first one was 1919. Way off, they could see a pillar coming out of the
rise
water.
Rise up,
Which is, if it was the creature, it was most like the neck of the creature.
But it actually was an underground alien facility that was sending an obelisk up through to harness atmospheric energy.
Yep.
Continue.
Continue. So 1920, the close encounter with certain what he saw. If it happened at about 8 in the morning, when he was about a mile west of Musco Island, St. Clement Island, in his power cruiser and the framed fishing buddy, Smith Warren. He wrote this of this encounter. All of a sudden, I saw a dark, big heave up. I seized my glasses, and what I saw brought me straight up. A great column of neck and head. I guessed that it was lifting a good 10 feet. It must have been 5 or 6 feet thick. Something appeared to be kind of a mane or coarse hair. Almost like, I got to turn the page. That of a fine seaweed hung dankly. But the eyes, that's what held me. Huge, seemingly bulging, round, at least a foot in diameter. They swung around. Then I even watched through my glasses. The thing sank. There was no swirl, no fuss, just a leisurely, majestic sink as it disappeared about a quarter of a mile away. He thought it was bigger than the biggest whale. And the years followed. He would see the creature twice more, but never again so close. Others would see it. George Farnsworth, the president of the Tuna Club, described it in the book The History of the Tuna Club in 1948. Talking about the eye was a foot across, the mane of the hair was 2 foot long. Others who saw it said the similar description of the creature, including a millionaire George C. Thomas III, ex-Tuna Club president Jimmy Jump, deep-sea fisherman expert and investigator of Cornix Reels, Joe Cornix, and the author of many technical fishing books, J. Charles Davis II. Each of them saw it at a general location, and most of them saw it multiple times.
So very credible people.
Yeah, I mean, these guys at the time...
bared witness to this thing.
...were like... Well, I said, you know, a couple more stewards of conservation of the California coast, but...
They're like the Jeremy Wade of their time.
Of their time, yes.
Yes.
But yeah, and there's tons more stories in this book. We're gonna end the encounter part of it there.
Okay.
And then I'll get switched to the iPad.
Oh, okay. Jump over. But yeah, like I said, very credible witnesses on that account. And there's something obviously sticking around in that area for so long, for so many people to witness it multiple times. That's pretty amazing. It's almost even more amazing. It didn't end up on a slab or on one of their walls.
And I think it was because that at the time the Tuna Club was pretty famous for conservation.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Good fishermen, you mean?
Yeah, I mean
ethical fishermen.
I mean they were all millionaires, and they had.
But still, even good on them.
Yeah. So that may have been why none of them just pulled out a rifle and shot it in the head.
Right.
Because others did. There are other encounters in the book where they just shot him in the head.
Well, we know people with a lot of money but don't hesitate to do
so
things
far,
like that.
All the encounters kind of have several things in common besides the general things I talked about at the beginning. The eyes. Mm-hmm. They always talk about the eyes being very mammalian, being a very full life, and even bulging. There are animals that have those eyes today, which we'll talk about. But what could these be? You know, let's talk about what these could be.
All right, here we go.
What do you think before I get into it?
Water horse. Well,
go ahead.
The first thing before we even started any of getting into the accounts came to mind was like the water panthers or things of that nature. I'm wondering if there's any crossover with like Native American legends and these things, which there may be. But then again, that don't answer this question though. What is it? Because I still don't know what a water panther is besides like...
I'm still the believer that it's an otter.
Like very well could be an otter or an elemental or, you know, something of that nature, something supernatural maybe. But but flesh and blood, what are these things? Do I have any idea?
I mean, they don't have to be flesh and blood.
Okay.
I'm just saying...
animal known to science.
An anti-submarine round may be able to kill a dog man, I guess.
Maybe.
I mean, it is, if any gun's going to do it.
It's got a better shot than a 22.
I mean, that's true.
Even a Ford 22. Is that a caliber?
Never heard of that.
I mean, they're just sounding big.
Maybe one of those weird, like...
How about a 410? That's one. That's a shotgun shell. Well, those aren't that bad either. I mean,
It would kill you.
Yes, but not like a slug. It's not as bad as that. Or 12 gauge or nothing like that. But I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know what this could be. I'm not as well versed in the sea monster category as you are. So I'm sure you're going to have a lot better explanations than me.
I have several things.
Yes.
First one is one that when you weren't able to be on the show, I did with Michael. Now I'm going to say it. The Pensacola Sea Serpent, which was the death of several young boys, was accredited to a sea serpent. One of them survived, washed up on the beach, described this horrific monster encounter where I don't know if the monster – we talked about it where the monster may have knocked the boat over and not chased them. So it could have been an accidental, you know, cause of death from monster.
Right.
But one of the things we talked about in that was a very bizarre and rare animal that feeds a very unique way. So we're going to talk about right whales.
Oh, okay.
So really, really huge body whales. Their top jaw is very thin, with the baleen, which is a thick, coarse hair coming down the edge of it. They do what's called skim feeding, to where they keep their bottom jaw below the surface, but they raise their top jaw up and skim the surface. And they literally look like it's a thin, long, curved neck.
Wow.
With their knob on the end of it.
Yeah.
They have a stony knob on the end. So it literally looks like a 12-foot, 15-foot tall creature's neck and then the body of the whale behind it.
Yeah, with the little head on the end.
Yeah, with yeah. that, and that's that, you
the
know.
The knob you were yeah. talking about.
It's a coral outcrop they grow. Or not coral, sorry, barnacle.
Oh, okay.
So this, I highly suggest everybody look up videos of this phenomena. They're very rare.
A right whale?
Yeah.
Like spelled right, like your right hand?
R, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's very rare. They skim feed. They're very, very large. All these places that we went into so far, they can't end up in. So pretty much they can end up anywhere in the ocean. So that's not saying much.
Okay.
But we didn't get into any of the freshwater ones today.
So I guess for some of these accounts at a distance, this yeah. could explain some of them.
And when they move back, it looks like the head's being yanked back, which is their jaw shutting.
Okay. Yeah. Just the jaw shutting. Okay.
And they're very shy.
Hmm. I wonder
due
why.
To whaling, due
yeah,
to whaling.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Due to whaling and military ships just taking pot shots at whales.
Right, yeah.
Because that ship had done that before, the Hillary.
Wow.
Well, they would use whales for target practice.
Nothing like a... never mind.
No, it was...
Yeah, I'm going to skip that comment.
Just saying, there's a reason probably why sea monsters don't talk to us.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so what do you think of this option?
Oh, like I agree with you with some of the ones at a distance very well could have been mistaken identity seeing these guys and being very confused or just, you know, not if you didn't know about this particular whale. Are there other whales that feed like this or is this mainly the only one we got left or?
Yeah, it's more that. Bowheads, which are closely related, may feed like this too.
Yeah.
There's like 8 bowheads left.
8 species or 8 individuals?
No, like 8 individuals.
Oh, okay.
It's Ted, yeah, Larry, yeah. Michelle.
They're all tagged and named.
They're very rare. Yeah. Bowhead whales are very, very rare. Very whale.
Yeah, very whale.
You know, you use so many
sick.
W's.
We're so sick, yeah. Oh, white gosh. Whale, very well.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's right.
God,
yeah.
It's the last episode of the day. I mean, no. We actually record the podcast in backwards through the week.
Yeah, we do.
So you hear the Monday episode is like the last thing we record. Gosh. But no, so I think this could be some of the encounters. I do not think this is all of the encounters.
Right, because it does not explain away when them seeing those eyes.
Like, yeah.
Or, yeah, it just doesn't account for that at all.
But whales do have that bulging eye. They have massive eyes and they have deep, all these encounters kind of describe a yeah. deep feeling mm-hmm. to the eyes. Not, you know, not a scary feeling, but... Mm-hmm. Like, there's thought.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
All right, next one is going to be a lot of things. Seals, dolphins, and whales doing strange behaviors covered in seaweed.
Okay.
Causing the silhouettes. So seals and dolphins, let's start with those, have been known to, you know, play with seaweed, do things with seaweed. Dolphins play tag with seaweed. Seals will actually wear it as, like, to hide.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like big seals, like everything from harbor seals to stuff like that, there may be this forced perspective angle where they're actually much closer and then people think they're farther away.
Okay.
So they're actually a lot smaller than you're realizing.
Gotcha, yeah.
Building onto this idea is more whales. So I talked about the right whale feeding, skim feeding behaviors. This is that humpbacks will hang their arm flipper, they'll hang their flipper out of the water and have it kind of curved. And so they've been noticed that just hanging out of the water like that.
Like a orcas in captivity's dorsal fin?
Yeah, but they just do this. And then recently, it's finally gotten filmed. Humpbacks will sit upside down with their tail fluke out of the water and curved. And they think it's a defensive posture. They don't really know, though. There's a lot of mystery goes into this. They think it may be so they can hammer on, like, any predators getting your calves.
Okay.
They would just destroy you.
Like, are they flipping upside down, basically?
Yeah, their nose is pointed down towards the bottom. Their tail and tail flippers raised high above the water.
Okay.
But humpbacks have also been seen carrying big things of, like, seaweed on them and stuff like that.
Okay.
So this could cause this whole broken up silhouette with them lifting their fins out of the water or their tail fluke out of the water.
And they don't know why they do this behavior?
No, there's a lot of guessing work.
I mean, I got a kind of an idea of what it could be, but why they're doing it.
Huh.
Well, you know how like when you're laying in bed at night and your nostrils flooded on one side, so you flip over and roll over the other way?
There you go.
That's just all they're doing.
That could be.
Clearing their nasal passages.
Yeah, it could be.
We're all mammals, right?
We're all mammals.
We all face the
we're
same
all mammals,
issues.
Baby.
Yeah. We all face the same issues from human to whale. It sucks when your nose right. gets clogged.
Very few humans have been used for target practice for anti-submarine
fire.
Oh,
my gosh. No, that's false, I believe.
I'm not. Humans are bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that it's not 100%. No, humans have been. A person has been used.
Yes, as target practice.
Yeah,
just
probably
because.
Not as often as whales were.
No, actually, I think that's what
got some anti-submarine guns specifically.
Well, yeah.
I'm being very specific.
That was actually the plot of The Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger. They just fired upon a crowd of innocent humans because they were protesting, and then they blamed it on Arnold and threw in because he refused to
do
it.
I remember that.
He refused to do it, and then was government orders. He's like, no, I'm not doing it. And then they're like,
in a helicopter?
Yeah, he was in a helicopter. Yeah. He said no, but they did it anyways, and they blamed it on him.
Next one.
Mm-hmm.
Kelpies.
Kelpies.
Which are, depending on which, you know, which part, which kelpie, even silkies, which have two different type of thing being lumped in them, are described at, huh?
The silkies.
Not the chicken.
I know. That's how I was going.
No, so kelpies are described as being aquatic horse-like creatures. A lot of times, true kelpies or hippogriffs from like Rome and Greek area are described as being aquatic horses. Kelpies generally have a horse visage. Like they look very horse with mm-hmm. aquatic features.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to like hippogriffs, which is like, I think Rome and Greek, I can't remember off the top of my head right
one
now.
One or the other.
Is a horse front with like a mermaid tail.
Okay.
So like they have the neck, they have the horse head, they have the front horse, you know, arm or legs, but a long serpentine tail with a tail fluke.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But yeah, so maybe these are the same thing. Maybe, I don't know. It just somebody was talking about kelpies being long necked, these harried sea serpents. And I could kind of see them maybe having the same roots as seeing, you know, a horse, you know, the head being described roughly horse like. And by that, I mean the kind of the general shape, because none of the features on the head seem very horse.
Right, right.
And like the mane.
The protuberances.
Oh, yeah, the bumps. So what do you think of kelpies?
Well, I mean, were kelpies ever something in modern day known to science at all? Like, is there actual evidence or fossils of them, or is it just mostly from folklore and paintings or depictions from ancient times?
Folklore.
Okay. Well then, shoot, just like on ancient maps, when they draw all those crazy, not ancient maps, but you know what I mean, older maps, how they have all those crazy sea creatures drawn in the ocean, and you know, people are like, oh, that's just nuts. Those
hippogriffs are on those maps a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So there probably were real at some point. Maybe these could just be them that's left, or just carried on, that's made it, that knows to avoid humans.
Yeah, could be.
I've been down for it. I'm here for it. I like the idea.
Next one you already said today, and you didn't even realize it.
Uh-oh.
Sea elementals.
Oh, okay. There you go.
You said it, and you didn't even realize it.
Well, I remembered it, but I just kind of a passing comment.
Yeah, I know, but disgusting. Sea elementals. These may be the representatives of, like we've talked about, some Bigfoots may being the representative of forest elementals.
Right.
And, you know, how some, like, wind elementals or air elementals may be what, like, these Thunderbird-like sightings are. It may take forms that are hodgepodge.
Physical forms, yeah.
Physical forms of hodgepodge of creatures of the environment they are either protecting or maintaining.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, like, seal things, you have flippered things, you have whale things, you have, you know, eel-like things with the big long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what's happening here?
Hmm. I this is kind of tangent, kind of not, but you know how they say like God can't directly interfere or change, you know, do things like physically can't, like, you
who
know,
says that?
Well, in a sense, like I like, okay, I'm gonna pray for this to happen, and then bam, it like he appears and intervenes and makes this stuff happen. I'm trying to think of an example, I don't know, just anything random. Like, I don't know, I wish for you know, a giant whale to fall out of the sky and land on the yard. Like, he's not already, and that's a little extreme. Or, you know, I wish my house was fixed, and then bam, a bolt of lightning hits it, and it's all brand new and clean. Like, that don't happen. But I believe, like, what if he sends things here that could accomplish those things or something? I don't know. What if this is just a creation of, or that's what maybe elementals take.
These used to be
physical forms that, you know, that can change things here physically, but it's a representation of a higher power.
I mean, they used to talk about sea monsters used to save people, and then we started shooting them with anti-submarine rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stopped saving people.
That around. Actually, and you just remind me of something I just saw last night. This is kind of weird. It's still more of a tangent, but it's kind of like, it applies to this, because what if it is, even those creatures in nature, you know, kind of do these things. Elementals are protectors of sea. There was this fishing boat out in the ocean, and a dolphin came flying up to the side of the boat, and it was squeaking. You know, you could hear him like doing the dolphin noises, really loud, but it had this big sea turtle in his mouth, and it was shoving the sea turtle onto like these guys' fishing boat, and they're like, what's going on? And it's like making all kinds of noise. Well, they grabbed the sea turtle out of its mouth and pulled it onto the boat, and it had this huge net wrapped around its neck, like hard. And the dolphin brought it to them, and so they cut the net off, cleaned all the wounds up, and cleaned the net. And all the while they're doing this, that dolphin's just circling the boat, you know, hanging around waiting and waiting. They got the net, cleaned the turtle up, dropped him back in the water. The dolphin came back to him and, like, swimming around, clearly was all happy, and then they both swam off together. But, I mean, nature's pretty freaking amazing to be able to do that. I mean, the dolphin clearly brought it to the humans to help his friend, his turtle, and they did. And it's pretty wild.
So you go and see elemental?
I mean, there's a chance. Well, nothing like wonderful or I guess terribly bad happened besides their boat getting destroyed by that German submarine. But that was probably more karma than sea elemental induced.
I mean, they shot it. They did that. I mean, they
right.
They did that.
Right. But I mean, sea elemental maybe to some degree, maybe. But I just feel like those more associated with things happening or maybe. I don't know. Could be.
Okay. I have the real answer.
All right.
I
mean, that's what I'm waiting on.
It's very simple, and I can't believe nobody's really got this. Acer phorica. Acer phorica.
Is this like the Trunco thing?
No, this is just an animal, Acer phorica. These are Acer phorica that are being seen, and people just don't have an understanding of that.
Oh, what's Acer phorica? Is that like the Latin name?
That's Acer phorica. Yeah, it's the Latin name.
So what's the real name?
Creatures, so they have bulging eyes, right? Long necks, furred manes with seal-like skin, right?
Okay, following along.
They're very described to be a very certain way. They kind of sound, right, like long-necked seals.
Okay.
Their body is very similar, but seals, if you just stretched out the neck.
Mm-hmm.
The head seems very almost walrus-like. These thick bristles, these bulging eyes, even poor eyesight, though, even though they have big eyes.
Because
mm-hmm. They're like walruses and elephant seals are hunting at the bottom of the ocean. So using their big whiskers.
To feel and look for mollusks.
Acer phorica is an extinct species of long-necked seal.
We have fossil evidence of these?
These guys just went extinct.
Just went?
Yeah.
So they're probably still out there.
They're probably what people are seeing. Let's talk about Acer phorica. They are a late Miocene animal. There's not a ton of information on them. Acer phorica longturus, which translates roughly to swan-necked seal.
Oh, cool.
Is an extinct genus of late Miocene pinniped. Now, there were several species of these guys, both in fresh and salt water, and what appeared to be some bracket, like some androgynous, where they'd go back and forth. They'd follow salmon runs. It was thought to be an ancestor of modern leopard seals, which have longer than average necks of sea lions or seals. However, it is believed now to be a species of monk seal, but this is still under much debate today.
Hmm. Very interesting. Acer phorica.
Acer phorica. The fossil of Acer phorica longeterus has been discovered in the Pisco Formation of Peru and in the Ballas Indias Formation of Chile. When it was first described in 1981, it was closely related to Labyrinthus sea lions, which include modern-day leopard seals, crab beater seals, and webbed seals. Ross seals, however, is now thought to be a basal species of monk seal.
Ah, basal.
So the rough description of one of the species we have a lot of bones of. So the...
bone? Like actual bones?
Fossils and bones, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Acerphorica measured about 5 feet long. It was not well adapted to swimming as its descendants, possibly leaving developed flippers and more of a streamlined long neck. This may incite it to spend a lot of time near the coast and near the surface of the water. Its teeth were built for piercing, implying that it had a direct, mostly diet of fish. However, other fossils have showed these cusp teeth, which show it may have actually been either filter feeding, like eating big things of krill and stuff like that, or feeding on crustaceans on the bottom.
Okay.
Unlike other earless seals, how did I even say it a second ago?
What, Acerphorica?
Acerphorica had a long and flexible neck with an elongated body. Its orientation of its pelvis was comparable to modern earless seals, as well as its adapted hind limbs suggested it was swimming was mainly powered by its back flippers. So it swam more like a whale than modern-day seals do. It was less adapted for the sea, like the labyrinth seals, and such it inhabited near-shore waters. Though that was the small species we have many, many fossils of. Excuse me. There were some larger species. And some of these larger species had a neck that was almost the same length as the body.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was long, flexible, strong neck, swung neck seals. Like I said, these guys are found with Thylacoleus, a trunked crustacean, and Obotuthius, a marine sloth, such as bottlenose dolphins, gannets, and cormorants. So these guys were found just besides extinct things and modern day things.
Okay.
They look just like the description of these things. Big bulging eyes, long heads, mouth towards the front of the head. Their eyes are really far away from their mouth. Long necked. The main thing, so some seals and sea lions, you look at elephant seals, we've talked about a lot in the show, they actually go through their seasonal molt where they have big chunks of what looks like skin hanging off, but it's just, actually old fur. Because their fur is so densely packed, it makes like these big mats.
Kind of like when we brush out our chow.
There you go.
She has that, when it's time for shedding, her undercoat, it comes out in just chunks.
But these guys had a big flexible nose. They were comfortable in what appears to be from tropics to Antarctic waters. They were generalists. They were amazing animals we do not know much about. But they look just like the long neck, the mer horses that we were talking about today.
Yeah.
Which have been reclassified, I saved this from you, as long neck seals.
Wow.
So the modern depiction of that course is long neck seals. Pinky, we said, was probably a sunburnt long-neck seal.
Poor guy.
Because we've talked about that with like manatees and some other marine animals. When they get kind of old and they have, they're staying on the surface a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
They can get sunburnt. So Pinky may have, in fact, been one of these guys coming into the St. Johns River.
Got sunburnt.
Sunburnt.
Happens when you're in Florida.
I think it was some type of swan-neck seal. A lot of paleontologists say these are the mammalian version of plesiosaurs.
Wow.
That their fossils are so similar. The big difference was a joint at the bottom of the neck to allow their heads to operate like that of a swan.
Oh, okay.
So plesiosaurs could not do that.
Right, yeah.
They couldn't lift their head out of the water very far at all.
No.
They couldn't do that stance. Long-neck seals are specifically designed to do that stance on the surface of the water.
You think by some chance the Loch Ness Monster could have been one of these two?
I think some of the sightings could have been one of these, falling in salmon runs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think that these mer horses are long-necked seals. The manes could be seasonal shedding, or they could have sexually dimorphic manes.
You think any 70-footers are still out there?
I personally don't think they were ever that big.
Or is that them maybe misjudging?
I think they maxed out. I'm going to guess around 30. That's some of our biggest pinniped fossils. Like, elephant seals are just monstrous.
Monsters, yeah.
Now give them a 16-foot long neck too.
Yeah, it's a big, that's a big old seal.
So that's 30 foot long, you know, a little over 30 foot long.
Big old boy.
But it really didn't change the weight that much.
Okay.
So a 10,000 pound elephant seal, if you just took a little bit of the front and made it have a 16 foot neck.
So if it fit its skin?
Yeah. Like that one, yeah. Anybody hasn't seen that taxidermy example of an elephant seal that the taxidermist got and stretched out its skin because of all the wrinkles?
Because he didn't know.
It's like, yeah. I think it would be like 40 or 50,000 pounds.
That'd be nuts.
Because they have a lot of wrinkles. No, I think they're swan neck seals. I think that they are a surviving group. They went extinct relatively recently, around 4 million years ago, with some fossil evidence suggested that their family group maybe made it much, much earlier. We're talking, you know, within the 400 or 500,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Which we know all the time for species. It's rarer for a mammal to do it. It's less rare for an ocean animal to do it. So they probably end up right in the middle of likelihood of being able to avoid detection through extinction.
Right, yeah.
So I think these guys, I really think they're long-necked seals. I think a lot of these sightings are just a super rare ocean-going animal that may have been hunted. We talked about in the whaling episodes we've done that they killed mysterious animals all the time.
All the time.
Like the, oh no, okay, what was the one that Andy Arugula suggested? That they killed a mosasaur, or a mosasaur-like creature, an oceanic crocodile.
Yeah.
One of those type creatures. They killed a big one, a whaling vessel did. And they had it chopped up before they got to shore. And they were rendering its fat into oil. Jeez. And the only thing they kept of it was the skull that he sold to some guy.
Wow. And it's probably in the basement of the Smithsonian right now. Mm-hmm. Or in the bottom of a river.
I was just going to say, it could still be in some family's basement thinking it's fake.
Or that too.
And, you know, like, well, grandpa, great-grandpa bought this skull at a beach.
Right, yeah.
Thinking, yeah. You know, it's just a fake. No, so I think that these guys... Seals aren't dumb. Elephant seals were almost wiped off the planet due to commercial whaling.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they ran out of whales to murder,
they started whaling other big mammals.
Stabbing every other mammal in the ocean.
Yeah.
Sailor sea cow, we've talked about in the show a lot, that they were wiped out 27 years after their discovery.
That's just wonderful.
Because they were really friendly, and we were good at stabbing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
not a good combo.
I think these guys may have had the same
fate.
The same fate, but they may have survived as well, hiding out in small populations. There are several stories in the book in Iceland and Greenland talking about these guys hanging out on land in small family groups.
Hmm.
So it looks like they may be breeding, giving birth in the Arctic and Antarctic, in Iceland and Greenland and really remote areas.
Areas away from us.
Yeah, yeah. And they may have been breeding on coastal America.
Notice how none of these stories, these accounts, are near Japan.
So they ate all of their long-necked seals a long time ago. No, the Japanese government are still actively murdering whales. We're going to do a full episode on it, but we just had a 30-minute actual conversation with a humpback whale.
Oh, yeah, stay tuned. We'll tell you that story.
That'll maybe
in the near future.
Next couple episodes, I think it's on the schedule.
Yeah.
But we're still murdering whales, and they just proved that they are fully sentient.
Yes.
Able to have conversations, rational reason. And they talk about their babies a lot.
That's awesome.
Oh, well, and we're murdering them.
That's not awesome.
For sushi. Or would they be sashimi?
No, I don't think they really eat whale sushi. And well, I guess some...
I'm not joking. They eat raw whale on a lot of in sushi restaurants.
Well, then never mind. I've never had whale sushi.
No, it's not. It's illegal here.
Okay, I was going to say.
Even though in California a couple years back, a guy got arrested for serving whale in a sushi restaurant.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, he got caught...
He labeled it whale?
You know, he bought a flipper off a whale, took the meat out of the edge of it, threw it away in his dumpster.
Oh, what a moron.
A shared dumpster with another restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was. Now, I may be getting it mixed up here. I think it was a humpback whale, like a juvenile, that a fishing boat had accidentally killed, quote unquote, and was selling to select customers.
Oh, my gosh. I guess he should have gotten in trouble. It should have traced back to the whale or the whalers.
A lot of people should be in prison forever.
Awful.
But no, so I think that's what happened. I really do think these were long-necked seals. I think they're still there. I think they're just in very low numbers, and they're very skittish. I think it's very hard to get close to them. So this could be a combination. Like you said, Loch Ness, these knob-headed creatures.
Mm-hmm.
They may have once been much more common in the Loch, and either due to commercial fishing mixing in with commercial whaling. You know, we're now what's called like dredging the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and that's just destroying the ocean. Yep. So They just may be in low numbers. But that's what I think. I mean, are you going to go with that?
I mean, you made a very strong case for it. I can't. I guess I got nothing that could make more logical sense than that, other than it just being another random, a rare animal that we have no idea.
And there could be that. I did leave that out. That's always an option for these guys. It could just be a whole
another thing we don't
unique animal.
Yeah, that we just don't know about that has similar, or maybe an offshoot of these things. Who knows?
Yep.
Anything could be possible.
I've been the great and powerful mystery.
I've been J Clone 120.
We'll catch you next week, guys. Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cribs of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.